We're going to continue on today in our series that we've been doing at Pastoral's Bible Church, and that's a series in the Sermon on the Mount. And we're going to be teaching today in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 38. If you're at home and you're on a computer, I'm not sure about if you're on a smartphone, but if you're on a computer and you go to the Pastoral's Bible Church website, you can see a live feed. I believe the live feed, let me confirm that with our sound guy. The live feed is on our website. And also, there's a little link right below, I think, the picture on the website. If you want to click on that, it'll give you access to the sermon notes. So if you're interested in kind of seeing an outline of where we're headed this morning, you can click on those notes. If you want to, you can print them out if you have that, or you can just follow along or jot some notes down on a separate piece of paper, whatever you guys want to do. I just wanted to make sure you guys knew those were available for you if you wanted them. Okay, so we're going to get into Matthew chapter 5, starting verse 38 in just a minute. And the big picture of this series that we're doing is, how can we become better disciples of Jesus? How can we live as disciples of Jesus? And we're using the Sermon on the Mount in order to get us to that goal. So I was just thinking about this week. What are some of the unwritten rules that we live by as a society? So if you're home and you have access, just start typing in. I like to see the answers. I can't see them right now. Actually, let me see if I can see this right now. And start typing in. What are some of the unwritten rules of our society? Here, let me give you an example to get us started. Like say you go out and you see somebody and they're wearing headphones. What's the message they're giving to you? Don't talk to me, right? So that's an unwritten rule for saying. They're not laws necessarily. They're just kind of some unwritten rules. Let's see if I can see this. I'm going to turn my sound down. I don't see the messages on there, so I think I'm just going to turn that off. Now listen, here's a couple of others that I thought of. Maybe this is actually a law, I'm not sure, but like when you're driving at night and you're out on the road and you got your bright lights on and you see another car coming along, what are you supposed to do? Turn your bright lights off. Like, that's an unwritten rule of our society. Here's one for guys only. Okay, guys, you ready for this one? You walk into a public bathroom and there's a whole bunch of urinals. You got to observe proper urinal etiquette. Guys, you know what I'm talking about. We'll just leave it at that. On a related note, here's another unwritten rule. You go in and you use the last little bit of toilet paper. Well, what do you got? You got to replace that roll. Okay, replace the roll. And like here, you go and you got your chewing gum. You don't spit that gum out on the ground. You just put it in a garbage can. Don't even put it in a drinking fountain, right? I mean, there's like all these unwritten rules that we live by. They're not laws. They're just rules that we live by in order to be nice to each other, right? Just to be kind to each other as we live together. Here's a few more, maybe a little bit more serious ones. How about this? Hard work is the key to success. Unwritten rule of our culture. The early bird gets the what? The worm. Look out for number one. These unwritten rules of our culture. Unwritten rules exist in the church too, right? Now, depending on where you live, by the way, I was told last week that we were represented on at least 3 continents around the world, which is pretty crazy to think about. I think we had some people watching in London, which is really awesome. Hey, London, if you're there. We had a couple of different groups of people listening in Africa. So Africa, what's up? How you doing? And then, of course, here in all around North America, we got people listening. But so no matter where your church is, where you go to church, your unwritten rules of your church may differ a little bit, but you got to believe they're there. What are some of the unwritten rules that we have as a church? I want you to think about that for a minute. Maybe type some answers so other people can see them. If you guys are here right now, I'd ask you to just kind of yell it out loud, and we'd get a few responses on that. Is there anybody responding to that question? What are some of the unwritten rules of the church? No, nobody's awake yet. I think there's a little bit of delay, so we'll give it a second. Let me give you some. Unwritten rules of the church. What about how a person's supposed to dress when they come to church? Did somebody write that? Yeah, who wrote it? Can you see it real quick before it leaves? Who wrote it? Who? Aunt Karen? My sister-in-law, Karen. Hey, Oregon. Yeah, how you dress when you come to church. Some churches, suit and ties, right? Some churches, come as you are, right? And then PRBC, we're kind of in the middle. We're just kind of whatever, casual. So how you dress. What's another one? Anything else you guys see there? I got my guys back here, my tech team. What have we got? Anything else?
Smile and look happy.
Smile and look happy. Yeah, no matter what's going on in your life, right, we got to act a certain way. I got that one. How are we supposed to act? Put on a smiley face even when we're dead inside and we're hurting inside? Or should we be honest? Yeah, that's a good one.
No phones on.
No phones on when you come into the church. Yeah, I like that one. That should be a rule anytime you go into a public meeting place. Let's get a little bit more personal. Should a Christian drink alcohol? How about that one? Have you thought about that? Well, it depends on your church culture, maybe. How about smoke? Should a Christian smoke? I don't know. That's one. What are you guys smiling back there? You got another funny one? He can't say it out loud.
Wear Dodger blue always.
Oh, man, come on. Wear Dodger blue. I got about three or four guesses about who wrote that one. And I'll watch this back later. Whoever that was, watch out. That's the good thing about this coronavirus. At least the Giants aren't like 8 games out of first place already. What? Yeah. A whole bunch of unwritten rules about the church. What about this one? Like what kind of songs are you supposed to sing in the church? Right? That's an unwritten rule of church culture. Only sing hymns, only sing praise chorus, only sing a certain type of music. Loud drums, no drums, whatever, electric guitar, rap music, what do we want? It depends on your culture, right? That's a big one. Anything else? Any other good ones on there, or should we move on?
Kids need to sit there and be quiet.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. What about what version of the Bible should you read? King James only? I preach from Christian Standard Bible, CSB. What about this one? Let's get a little bit more personal. How about women in the church? Could women be pastors? Could women even preach in a church? That's a big one. Depends on your culture. So there's all these unwritten rules in our culture. And you know what's going on today in our culture certainly was going on in Jesus' day, in his culture. And actually throughout history, this has been going on. When back in Jesus' day, we talked about this a little bit last week. Back in Jesus' day, they had their set of laws there, and they were called oral tradition. And so Jesus had a way of taking that oral tradition, the rules that people wrote, and sort of turning them up on their head. Here's a few examples of the way Jesus took the traditional culture of his day, the unwritten rules of his day, and turned them around and redefined them almost in the kingdom of heaven. Here's a few. Jesus said this, "The greatest among you will be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but whoever humbles himself will be exalted. The last will be first, and the first will be last. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life because of me and the gospel will save it." You know, in the last few weeks, I can kind of hear a feedback. Is that coming from here? It's coming from here. No, I think it's coming from somewhere else. Oh, well. In the last few weeks here, we've been talking about much of the same thing. It's how Jesus made a rule, and he took a well-known rule, and he reinterpreted it and reapplied it for kingdom living. That's sort of the way that That's sort of the way that we've been approaching this series. Jesus takes a rule, an unwritten rule maybe, and reapplies it for kingdom living. For kingdom living. And in our passage today in Matthew chapter 5, verse 38, we're going to see him do it again. He's going to take a very well-known statement, and he's going to sort of clear up some of the misunderstandings about it. And this statement is not only well-known in the Bible, it's well-known in culture, and we still use it today. This statement is found in Matthew 5:38, and if you don't have a Bible, I will read it for you. It says this, Matthew 5:38, "You've heard it said," Jesus is talking, "you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This statement has come to be known as the law of retribution. It's found in three places in the Old Testament. And let me give them to you if you're curious. Exodus 21, Leviticus 24, and Deuteronomy 19. Three places in the Old Testament. And unlike the previous passages that we have looked at so far, Jesus's quote here is not from the Ten Commandments. Okay, all the ones we've looked at so far have been direct quotes from the Ten Commandments, which was part of the moral law. The moral law is sort of how people wants to live, how God wants his people to live spiritually in their hearts. Like, what kind of things should we obey? The do's and don'ts, sort of being a believer, being walking with Jesus. Or in the Old Testament days, being of the people of God. But Jesus quotes here, the three times he quotes here is a section of the law called the civil law. And the civil law is basically how God wants his people to govern themselves. It's the speed limit kind of laws, right? It's the what laws should we obey in order for our society to run smoothly. If everybody came to a stoplight and just went right through the red light, there'd be chaos. There'd be accidents out there on the road. And so we have laws to protect us. We come to a stop sign, we stop. Or if you live in California, we roll through it. We slow down at least. But these are the civil law, and they had them in the Old Testament. All sorts of laws of God telling his people how he wants them to live, what kind of rules he wants them to obey. And each of these three times this phrase, an eye for an eye, is mentioned in the Old Testament, the context is a little bit different. You can look them up a little bit later if you want. I'm going to spend a ton of time on it today. The context is a little bit different, but the principle is the same all three times. The principle is this idea of the law of retribution. And let me explain a little bit what that means. Have you ever heard the phrase, an eye for an eye, used outside of the context of the Bible, like maybe in a movie, or maybe you've heard somebody say it out there? And if you've heard it used outside the Bible, how have you heard it used? Like, what do people mean when they use this phrase outside the Bible? What do you say? I asked a few people this week that question, and every person that I asked that question came back with, eventually, they were talking, and eventually we came back to one word. And what word is that? You can write it. You can type it in if you want it right now. But I'm going to give you that word. If you answered the word revenge, then you get a gold star for the day. Go ahead and take your gold star. Put it right here on your chest. An eye for an eye out there in the world, or in a movie or whatever, that context, people always use that phrase, and it means revenge. It means this. It's okay for the injured person to take revenge on the one who injured them, right? And revenge almost always includes taking back more than was lost. Let me give you an illustration. Let's say we get in a fight, right? We're in a fight, we're out on the street, we get in a fight, and I give you a good punch, and it gets you right in the eye, and you go blind in your eye. I actually physically cause you to go blind. So the law of retribution would say that it's actually perfectly within your rights to poke my eye out and to take my sight, to make me go blind, in at least one of my eyes, if not both. That was the law of retribution. God meant it in a positive way in order to provide a system of justice for his people, but the people were manipulating it, using it as an excuse to take revenge on somebody else. The true intention of the law was not for revenge. It was actually to limit revenge. The intent of the law was never for the injured person, the one whose eye was metaphorically poked out. That person was never allowed to take revenge, but it was allowed for them to take compensation for what was lost. The intent was to show them how far they could go in order to get compensation, but no further than that. So an eye for an eye. It was an equal sort of system of justice, a balance of scales. And of course, we're not just talking about an eye. That's just a metaphor for any kind of loss. You may be out in a field and your neighbor accidentally gleans part of your field. Well, maybe he did it intentionally or unintentionally, but then the law of retribution says, well, now you have the ability to go glean the same amount of his field and take back what was lost. And that's the kind of, so it doesn't necessarily just mean an eye, it doesn't necessarily just mean a tooth. It's a metaphor for any loss that you would incur. And in fact, you might have suspected this already, that a law of retribution could also be paid back in the form of financial payback, right? So if you went out and accidentally sort of gleaned in part of my field, well, instead of just going to your field, I could actually calculate how much grain I lost and charge you for that amount, and you would have to pay me back for what you took, whether intentionally or unintentionally. That's the law in the Old Testament. It was not intended to encourage personal revenge, but to protect the offender from a punishment actually that harsher than it was warranted. And it had this double effect, really, in the lives of the people. First, and both were positive, I think, really. First, it was to provide a system of justice, but also it restrained revenge. And that was the purpose of the law of retribution. So with that in mind, if we go back to Matthew chapter 5 and look about what Jesus has to say here, he says, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. In other words, let me summarize what Jesus would be saying now in light of that definition of the law of retribution. It would be like this. Jesus would say, it's okay to seek a reckoning from an injury that's been caused upon you, even in the form of financial payback, as long as you don't go too far and take more than the injury deserves or requires. In other words, the law says treat each other fairly, justly. Don't take revenge and don't take advantage of one another. That's the law of retribution. And this actually, it kind of seems like a good rule. You know, if we were just to stop there, we might all kind of walk away from this and go, well, Jesus seems like a pretty fair guy. You know, I mean, he's quoting this rule, this law of retribution. He seems like, why wouldn't Jesus want us to get sort of fair compensation for something that we lost? That sounds right. That sounds good to me. It sounds like something Jesus might even say. Sounds like how Jesus might want me to live. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But listen, he doesn't stop there. And if you've been following this series, every time Jesus says, you have heard it said, he starts the bar right here. And then the next thing that comes out of his mouth, but I tell you, and what does he do? He raises that bar a little bit higher. And we're going to see the same thing this morning. Let's look at the next line that Jesus said. He continues in verse 39. He says, but I tell you, don't even resist an evildoer. Again, we see Jesus raising the bar. The law that he quoted allowed you to get compensation, but Jesus says what? Let it go. Let it go. If somebody wrongs you, if somebody takes some of your grain, if somebody even takes one of your eyes, let it go, Jesus is saying. Don't even pay back evil for evil. This law, at least how it came to be known in Jesus' day, the law an eye for an eye, and maybe even all these years later today still has the same kind of meaning. It really has to do with fear and punishment. I say fear and punishment because it sounds like this. The law would say, I want my rights. Okay? I want to do what's due to me. I want to see that person punished for the bad thing, the evil thing that they did to me. That's the law that Jesus is talking about here. But when I punish somebody else, when I take retribution on somebody else, when I take revenge on somebody else, it often means that I'm a little bit afraid, right? Afraid that God maybe won't deal with him, or afraid that they're going to get away with it, whatever it was. Maybe afraid that justice won't be done, or afraid that, and maybe this is even more applicable to us today, afraid that my reputation will be hurt. It's fear that lies behind my need to punish those who have hurt me. In the Old Testament era, they were protected by the law, but in the Jesus era, we are protected by a new kind of law. It's the law of love. Jesus said to someone one time, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. This is the greatest and most important commandment. And the second is like it. You guys know what it says. Love your neighbor as yourself. The royal law, the law of love. Jesus' disciple John, he says in his first letter, 1 John 4:18, John says this, there is no fear in love. Instead, perfect love drives out all fear because fear involves punishment. So the one who fears is not complete in love. And I think that's really applicable to what we're talking about here. If we're living under the law of retribution or the law of revenge, and we just want to see justice come to somebody else for something they did to us, well, we want to see them punished, right? That's the heart of this law. We want to see them get what's coming to them because of what they did to us. But Jesus says, don't do that. Jesus says, let it go. Jesus says, don't pay back evil for evil. As Jesus' disciples, and this is where we want to head this morning, as Jesus' disciples, we're called, as we would imagine, to be like Jesus. And Romans chapter 8, verse 29 says we're all in this process. We haven't reached the level we want to get to yet. We haven't been perfected yet. And in this fleshly, earthly life where we live in these bodies, these tents, we're never going to reach the level of perfection that Jesus wants us to, but we're in process. Between our conversion and the time we go into heaven, we're in this process, and the Bible calls it sanctification. We're growing in our likeness. We want to become more and more like Jesus. And if we want to become more and more like Jesus, we need to keep our eyes on him. Jesus, as his disciples, he set a high, high standard, didn't he? And Jesus practiced what he preached. And as his disciples, and maybe I say it like this, the degree to which we're going to be successful as Jesus' disciples is to the degree in which we also practice what he preached. And then we're going to begin to inherit the blessings that Jesus wants to give us and that Jesus has promised to us. Listen, if there's ever anybody that has ever lived on the earth that could have demanded compensation for ill treatment, it was the sinless, innocent, and perfect Lamb of God. But instead, Jesus didn't require retribution. He didn't take revenge on the people that hurt him. Instead, he patiently endured all the mistreatment and the persecution and even death. I want to pause in Matthew for a minute and read a portion of scripture from Isaiah chapter 53. And you may be familiar with this, but just listen to this. Listen to these words. This is talking about, this is a prophecy regarding Jesus, written about 1,000 years-ish before Jesus came around. Here's a prophecy about how Jesus would practice this principle that we're talking about today. Let me read a few verses. Isaiah 53 says, "He was despised and rejected by men. He was a man of suffering who knew what sickness was. He was like someone people turned away from. He was despised, and we didn't value him. And yet he himself bore our sickness, and he carried our pains. But we in turn regarded him stricken, struck down by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced because of our rebellion. He was crushed because of our iniquities. Punishment for our peace was on him, and we are healed by his wounds. We all went astray like sheep. We all have turned to our own way, and the Lord has punished him for the iniquity of us all. He," listen to this, "he was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, and like a sheep silent before her shearers, he did not open his mouth. He was taken away because of oppression and judgment, and who considered his fate? For he was cut off from the land of the living, and he was struck because of my people's rebellion. He was assigned a grave with the wicked, but he was with the rich man at his death, because he had done no violence and had not spoken deceitfully." These are powerful words of prophesying the kind of person that the Messiah would be. And Jesus fulfilled that. Jesus is our example to follow. Jesus defeated evil mistreatment. How did he do it? Not through retaliation, not through revenge, but through patient endurance, even in his suffering. And nobody ever suffered greater than Jesus. And so we, as Jesus' disciples, should follow his example, should practice what he preached and practice what he practiced. We should not retaliate, even when personally attacked. Instead, like Jesus, endure with patience and endurance and love. And even more than just endure in these situations, we may be able to sort of summon up the ability to endure from time to time. But even more than endure in these situations, we want to look for ways to thrive in these situations. Look for ways to do good. Look for ways to go beyond just what's expected of us and do great things. Treat people with kindness and love and compassion and mercy and forgiveness, because those are the ways that Jesus has already treated us. In fact, this principle is so important. As I read through the life and ministry and teaching of Jesus, you see this come up over and over and over and over again. He takes a topic and, like, forgiveness, for instance, and he says, "Forgive greatly because you've been forgiven greatly. Love greatly because you've been loved greatly." He has this principle over and over and over again. Don't retaliate or respond to people the way they respond to you. Jesus and rule, right? Treat others as you would want to be treated, not as you've been treated. Big difference. And so we thrive in these situations. In the rest of the passage that we have here before us, Jesus gives us 4 kingdom living principles. That's what I call them. In order for us to surrender our personal rights and to follow his example and to live as his disciples. And here's what we're going to do with these 4 kingdom principles. I'm going to run through them real quick. I'm going to read through them real quick. And then I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond where you're at right now. Maybe you're at home, maybe with your family, wherever you're at this morning. I'm going to give you a chance to reflect and respond, and just for a few minutes on these. Sometimes, as a pastor, you kind of got to weigh the pros and cons of me providing application or of letting you guys provide your own application. And I think this is one of those times where it would be much more powerful if you guys took a minute and provided a little bit of application for yourself, especially in the day and time in which we live right now. These, I think, are just speaking, they're yelling in our ears, Jesus' words here. So let's go through these real quick. Four kingdom living principles. The first one, the last half of verse 39, Jesus says, on the contrary, if anybody slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Here's the first principle, turn the other cheek, right? I mean, we've heard that phrase over, you hear that all the time, out there in the world. What Jesus is talking about here, it's not a physical slap in the face. He's talking about it's a metaphor for our dignity. When our dignity is hurt, when we're insulted, when somebody puts us down, when somebody uses harsh words against us, maybe when somebody gossips about us behind our back, whenever somebody bites or devours us with their words and we get insulted, what is Jesus saying here? Remain vulnerable even when our dignity is intact. If somebody attacks you with their words over here, don't lash out. Don't pay back. Don't talk about them. Don't gossip about them. Don't put them down. Don't come back with an insult. Jesus says, no, just let it go. Take it. Be vulnerable even in the insult. Verse 40, here's the second principle. As for the one who wants to sue you and take away your shirt, let him have your coat as well. Here's the second principle. Give him the shirt off your back. You've heard that phrase. It's interesting how many phrases we know out from culture that come from the Bible, and people don't even know they're using the Bible right here. Give them the shirt off your back. Whenever you hear that phrase, what does it mean? It usually is talking about somebody who's really generous, right? It's like that person would literally give you the shirt off his back, right? It means a person, a man or a woman who would do anything for you, right? And that's what that phrase means out there in the world. It means to have an attitude of generosity. It means that no matter what's asked of you, that you'll not only give what's required, but you'll go above and beyond what's required, right? It's like if they ask for part of what you have, you give all that you have. And I think that principle is definitely applicable for the days in which we live right now, with people losing their jobs, with people being isolated in their homes. We need, as Christians, we need to look for ways that we can go above and beyond and help each other. Maybe there's a physical need, or maybe it's just some kind of emotional need that people have. Let's look for ways as believers to give them the shirt off our back. Here's the third principle, verse 41. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. What's the third principle then? Go the extra mile. We hear that phrase all the time. What does it mean? It means go beyond what's necessary. Go beyond what's even expected to help somebody else. Even if you're being taken advantage of. You know, the idea here comes to mind where you pull up to a stop sign and there's maybe a homeless person sitting there, and they ask you, you know, they have a little sign, anything helps, or they ask you for money or whatever like this. And we kind of usually have two responses to that. One is we just kind of ignore them and we keep driving, or two is maybe we rummage through and we try to find whatever we have. But what if we actually went out of our way to keep stuff in our car that we could actually give people? Maybe even money. What if we just kept a whole pile of $5 bills with us at all times? So when we pull up to somebody, we give them a $5 bill. That would be fulfilling this principle right here. Go the extra mile. They may be expecting a dollar or a bottle of water, but maybe you give them a $20 bill. That's just one example of way that we can go the extra mile with somebody. Even if they're going to take that money and go buy booze with it. Even if they're going to take that money, maybe they don't even need it. But go the extra mile, even if we're going to be taken advantage of. Jesus doesn't qualify these, right? He doesn't say, be weary of being taken advantage of. No, he says, just do it. I'll take care of the rest of it. And here's the fourth principle, verse 42. He says, give to the one who asks you, and don't turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. And in a lot of ways, this is a summary of everything we've already talked about. God loves a cheerful giver, right? Principle number four. Give freely and generously and joyfully to others without ever expecting anything in return. When I was in college, I had a professor. I went to a liberal arts Christian college. I was studying to be a pastor, but we had to still take, you know, like English and science and math and a few of those to kind of get our degree. So I had to take this economics class, I hated it. I had a really bad attitude. I got to confess about it. But I still remember this, not the professor though, just from the subject material, but the professor was this amazing guy, just loving, kind, generous, intelligent, and just a great teacher. But more than that, he was just a good guy. And I remember him saying this one time in economics class at the master's college where I went all these years ago. He said, as he was talking, I don't even remember what he was talking about. I'm sure I wasn't paying attention. But he said this, he said, you know, if somebody ever asked me to borrow some money, if anybody ever asked me, hey, can I borrow $1,000? His answer was always no. You cannot borrow $1,000. And I thought, oh, and I think that grabbed my attention. But right after that, you know what he said? He goes, but I'll give you $1,000. I'll give you the money. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. As Christians, you know, he's given us a lot of times so much more than we need. What's our response? And maybe in the area of money, maybe in the area of some of our possessions, all those extra clothes that hang in our closet that we never wear, all the food that's in our pantry that we don't ever eat. Like, what's our response to the stuff that God gives us? Here's the principle. Give freely and joyfully to others and don't ever ask for anything in return. I think you can make the application on that one, especially in the day in which we live right now. There's people hurting out there. Look for ways that we can bless others. Maybe it's with money, maybe not. Maybe it's with something else. Maybe it's just with your time. Or maybe it's with a written note. You know, the mail's still working. Write a note, write a letter to somebody. Send it off in the mail. Those are the four kingdom principles. I just wanted to give you a minute. This might be a little awkward. I don't know how this is going to go. But we're just going to pause right here. We're going to keep recording. But I'm just going to pause from talking. And I just want to give you just a few minutes. I'm going to maybe give you 2 minutes. Just to start a conversation with who the people that you have there at home. And then we're going to come back together and finish this thing up. And hopefully you'll continue this conversation throughout this day if you're home with your family. Okay, so let's take 2 minutes and then we'll come right back. Okay? Look, I know that I know that this isn't easy, right? But, you know, nobody said it was going to be easy. To be a disciple of Jesus, sometimes it's hard. And, you know, Jesus used the phrase one time. He said, if anybody wants to be my disciple, let him deny himself, take his cross daily, and follow after me. Nobody ever said being a disciple of Jesus was going to be easy all the time. Sometimes he requires things from us that are hard and difficult. And I think this is one of those cases. It seems like these four phrases, more than maybe any other that we've come to so far in Jesus' sermon, make people feel a little bit uncomfortable, make people throw their hands up and say, you know, forget it. I can't do it. I can't live this way. I just, if Jesus wants me to live this way, I might as well just give up because I can't do it. And you know what? Humanly speaking, that's exactly right. We can't do it without him. The good news is that Jesus doesn't leave us alone. He doesn't leave us by ourselves in order to accomplish these things. He gives us help. And the help he gives us are is His Spirit living inside of us, empowering us to be able to accomplish the things that He wants us to accomplish. And living lives of discipleship that He wants us to live. I think the reason why these things seem to be hard for us is because they're so familiar. Even in our culture, even in our life, so many years later, the words of Jesus are so applicable to us today. They're so relevant to our day in which we live, as relevant as they've ever been. And I think that's just amazing how, you know, like the Bible can still have so much meaning to us all these years later. I'm going to keep reading it. I'm going to keep trying to do what it says. To live like Jesus would radically change our lives. We're going to look different than other people if we're going to start living and continuing to live like Jesus wants us to live. It's not a natural way to live. It's supernatural. It takes God's Spirit working in us and through us in order to sustain this kind of lifestyle. And I can't speak for you out there where you're at this morning, but it seems like with me sometimes, I actually spend more time trying to water down Jesus' teaching or looking for that loophole like we were talking about last week, or trying to explain away the teachings of Jesus. Like, He can't really be saying that because it seems hard or countercultural. He must not really mean that. He must really mean this over here because this is easier. I can grab hold of this. Instead of just submitting to what Jesus teaches in the Gospels, just submitting to His example and following after Him and literally living how He said I should live. You know, Mark Twain, he's known for his great quotes, and here's one. He said this: it's not the verses of the Bible that I don't understand that worry me. It's those that I understand far too well that worry me. I think that's true for us today. Jesus is calling us to follow Him and to share His passion for not only God, but His passion for other people, which is really what all these kingdom principles are about. How am I going to live not only in my relationship with God, but how am I going to live in my relationship with others? Other people, other believers, and other people out in the world that are not believers. How can I share His love and passion with other people, even when it's hard? That's the kingdom principles that Jesus wants for us today.